Marc-Andre Fleury to the bench.
Oh, boy.
Tomas Vokoun to the crease for Game 5 between the Pittsburgh Penguins and the New York Islanders on Thursday night. The war between the number one seed in the East and the lowly little yippy puppy that is the number eight seed in the East. And a goaltending change, sir, for the Eastern Conference champions in waiting, the Pittsburgh Penguins.
He has not been good in the playoffs. This just handed to me. News alert, news alert. Hey, how do you think Alan Walsh handles this one? He represents both goaltenders.
Right?
Haven't heard a comment from Alan Walsh on this one yet.
The theory was that, you know, Vokoun was going to go to a situation in Pittsburgh that wasn't going to upset Fleury. Like, that was the expectation, is that whatever the situation was going to be, it was not going to be a case where Fleury was going to come out of this thing feeling terrible about himself. But, I mean, the bottom line is that it's, like you said, a change that had to be made. Fleury has given up 40 goals in his last 10 playoff games. Fleury was terrible in Game 4.
We did last night on Hockey Central. John Shannon figured out 17 games he's allowed 57 goals in the playoffs. That's not good, right?
That's not good. That's not good.
No. And it's the way that they're going in, too. It's like those pinball goals, like the Okposo goal last night, you know, from behind the net. The goals on the weekend that bounce off the boards and hit his pads and go in. Now, mind you, a lot of these goals are deflections and a lot of these shots are tip-ins and a lot of these goals are going off shin pads. But as numerous general managers have said to their goaltending coaches, and I love this quote, does every deflected shot have to go in? Can they not stop one deflected shot? It's like the constant catch-all phrase, well, the shot was tipped. Well, the shot was deflected. Every GM has said this, or every coach has said this to the goaltending coach. Can't your guy stop one shot that's deflected, one shot that goes off a shin pad? Anyway, yeah, Tomas Vokoun goes in. You know what? He's been exceptional for the Penguins this year. I thought the minute the Casey Cizikas goal went in yesterday, I thought, that's it. Vokoun is in for sure.
Well, yeah, I think so, too. I mean, that was an embarrassing goal. Now, you said Vokoun's been good against good for them this year, good against the Islanders in particular. 3-0, stopped 98 of 101 shots that he faced. That's a .970 save percentage. He's been incredible. He's been incredible against the Islanders. But the issue, Jeff Merrick, is this. That is a regular season mark. The problem with Tomas Vokoun is the same problem that you've kind of had with Brett Johnson. A lack of true playoff experience in pressure situations. You're talking about a guy who has 11 Stanley Cup playoff games to his credit with the Nashville Predators in 03-04 and 06-07. I would say the stakes slightly higher in this Game 5 than anything that Vokoun has ever seen in the playoffs.
Although what it does for the Pittsburgh Penguins is it gives them a little bit of, and it may be temporary, a little bit of relief. I can't remember which goal it was yesterday. It was a shot from the point. It might have been Brian Strait's goal. I can't remember which one it was. And again, it was deflected off a shin pad and it went in. I can't remember which goal it was, but the top of the, in between the hash marks, Craig Adams is the center playing up high. The minute it goes in, he does that, throw his head back and look up to the sky, look like, oh my God, not again. The minute you see players on the ice doing that, you know all hope is lost in their goaltender. They just the shoulders come down. It's like, oh God, another one. Really, we've worked so hard to battle back. You know, it was a fascinating game to watch last night, too, with the, you know, the scoring leads and the changes and the shifts in momentum and the good goals and the pretty goals. How about that James Neal goal? Look out. Oh, man, that passing play. And some bad goals, some questionable goals from behind the net, playing ping pong, playing pinball. And then that happens. And Craig Adams just sort of summed up the entire Pittsburgh Penguins bench just by dropping his shoulders, dropping his stick, and looking up to the sky and saying to himself, we've worked too hard for him to ruin all of this. And I think that's probably where Dan Bylsma's at right now.
Yeah.
We just can't, like, he owes it to every other player on that bench to make this goaltending change. Yep. These guys have worked too hard this year, been too outstanding this year, and have been, you know, despite all the injuries, the key superstars, and we know who those are, they've worked too hard to be the number one team in the Eastern Conference. The only, we've said, only great team in the Eastern Conference. He owes it to that team to make a goaltending change.
Right. And again, it's not a goaltending change that should come as a total surprise, because this is why Vokoun was acquired. I mean, Bylsma said as much today in announcing the goalie change. This is why you bring Vokoun in. You bring Vokoun in because when Fleury gave up, I have trouble saying this sometimes, 7 goals in Game 2 against the Flyers last year. 7!
Yeah.
You couldn't turn to Brent Johnson. You couldn't do it. You could not turn the keys to that car over to Brent Johnson because he wasn't the guy who could handle the drive. And now that you have Vokoun acquired and on your bench and ready to roll, after Fleury gives up 6 goals in a game 4, well, then you could turn it over to Vokoun and see what he's got. Now, as I wrote on Puck Daddy just as the show started, the ramifications for this are, you know, big picture a bit more interesting than in many goaltending change situations. This is a number one draft pick. This is a franchise goalie. This is a guy with a cup ring. This is a guy who's got a lot of protectors, both in the fan base and in the media and within the organization. Thomas Vokoun wins this game, then wins the next game. Thomas Vokoun's your goaltender going forward.
Yeah, when was there's been a couple of times where Marc-Andre Fleury has struggled, and I think it was Sidney Crosby who actually went to Dan Bylsma and said, "No, he's our guy. He's our guy. Put him back in there. He's got to fight through this." But I don't know, man. When you're demi now with the New York Islanders, a team that many people, yours truly included, thought that they would/should steamroll, you got to make this change. You know what? I said that Dan Bylsma has to make this change for those players. Do you think that Dan Bylsma also has to make this change for himself? If they bow out for the second year in a row in the first round?
Yeah, that's trouble. I mean, and hey, look, man, you know, there's a guy who many people think will be on the unemployment line on the other side of the continent, whose team just lost 8 of 9 games in the first round. Talking about Alain Vigneault. So yeah. if you're Dan Bylsma and you get destroyed by the Flyers and then you wind up losing a 1-8 series to the Islanders, I don't think this man would be the coach of the Penguins next year. Do you?
I can't see Mario Lemieux going for that. I think that
really?
Lemieux would. Yeah, I can't see that. I can't see Mario Lemieux sticking with the coach is what I'm saying.
Oh, okay, I agree.
I think Lemieux, the word would come down from up on high. Yeah, he's done.
It's a ballsy move. I mean, here's what you could do. Is you could lose game 5, come back with Fleury in game 6 and hope that his head cleared, which I think is what would happen. I think Vokoun's got one shot at this, and it's to win the game. If he wins the game, he's probably going forward.
Okay, so right? Vokoun loses the next game, you come back with Marc-Andre Fleury, and he gives up 2 goals in the first 2 minutes. What do you do?
You keep him in.
You keep him in?
That's all you could do, right? Oh. You're either casting your lot with Vokoun or you're casting your lot with Fleury in these games.
You know, we've talked about the cliche before, show me a good goalie and I'll show you a good coach. Those two positions, especially at a time like this, and we'll get to Vancouver and Corey Schneider in a couple of seconds with Alain Vigneault, but man, those two positions are so linked in this game, the goaltender and the coach. How many good coaches have died an ugly and violent death behind the bench because their goaltender started leaking pucks? How many times? And conversely, how many coaches have won Jack Adams trophies because their goaltenders were phenomenal? Completely ridiculous and outstanding.
Well, I guess we'll see what the nominations look like this year when they come out, because I think there's a couple coaches that could be in that position, quite honestly.
Yeah.
I think Randy Carlyle was in that position, quite honestly.
Could be.
Towards the end of the year. But, you know, it's a fascinating thing. But in both cases, in both Vancouver's case, and we'll get to the Canucks later in the program. By the way, Bob Miller of the LA Kings broadcasting team joins us later in the program, along with Going Postal today. In both cases, I feel like the opponent doesn't get the credit it deserves. I mean, obviously, San Jose sweeping Vancouver doesn't look like your prototypical San Jose Sharks team. They look different. They look more confident. They look more complete.
Coaching.
It looks like they've finally got a balance between the stars and the role players playing well, and the Larry Robinson effect on that blue line and on special teams is palpable. They look like a different team, not necessarily getting all the credit they deserve, but looking like a different team. The Islanders, dude, the Islanders are flat out winning the track race. There is not a single instance in the series where you say to yourself, the Penguins can keep up with the Islanders in a 7-game series speed-wise. And that's been the big determining factor in this series. I think the Islanders are just damn faster than the Penguins are.
Can we back up to San Jose for 1 second? So I want to get to Travis Hammonick and the Islanders for a second. But you mentioned the San Jose Sharks. I just wanted to share this with everyone listening right now. I was texting with someone in the San Jose organization this morning, and I asked about specifically who you mentioned, Larry Robinson, because I'm with you. The Robinson effect is kind of obvious. and pretty big. And we remember we were actually doing the podcast the day that he signed with San Jose, and we said, bingo, right away, now they have someone who can do legitimate angry on the bench. The guy that's, you know, fingers are full of cup rings, who can do the let's get angry at these players. Because, you know, that coaching staff wasn't exactly as assertive as many people would have liked. So I was asking
as we said at the time, we said it was arguably the biggest move of the summer was them adding him to the coaching staff. Yeah.
Here's the exchange, from me. How much is Robinson responsible coming back? A lot, but no more than any of the others. Their work and presence allowed Todd to be Todd. Great chemistry and lots of trust with the players. That is what you're talking about. That is the Larry Robinson effect. Everything just sort of settled into place. And then the head coach didn't have to worry about being anything other than the head coach. And what comes along with that? Trust. Trust and buy-in from the players. And the other thing you're seeing with San Jose as well, you are seeing a dramatic shift from Joe and Patrick's team to Logan and Little Joe's team, don't you think?
Yep. Yep. Oh, for sure. And we've been waiting for this because Joe and Patrick's team can't win a cup. But Logan and Joe's team can probably win a cup. And you know what?
Maybe.
The more pressure you take off of Patrick Marleau, the more he becomes a dude who scored 4 goals in the first 4 games of that series.
Yeah, wrap your brain around that. Clincher in overtime. All right, go back to the Islanders. Yeah. We'll get to San Jose and Vancouver.
On top of the speed thing, the other thing about the Islanders is this. Can you name one player on the Penguins that has elevated his game? Like, elevated his game far and beyond regular season form? Because you probably have about 5 people on the Islanders that have done
awesome
that.
Awesome question.
Okpozo's one of them, without question. Yep. Hamonic, who you're going to talk about in a second, is one of them.
Hamonic's
There's a
the
number
guy.
Of guys in the Islanders that are playing above and beyond the level what we saw in the regular season. And it's one of the reasons why we are 2-2 in this series. It's not like it's all Marc-Andre Fleury all over the ice. Ooh. The Islanders are doing what they can to win this series against a superior opponent.
I'll give you another player, Casey Cizikas. Casey Cizikas, who when he was selected, many people thought was a long shot, not sure where his head was going to be after some of the issues
Merrick, I know where his head is going to be. It was going to be buried under the ice if Brandon Morrow had his way. did you see that highlight?
He was holding his stick.
It looked like the Shea Weber Zetterberg thing, except instead of the glass, he was pounding his face into the ice. It was amazing.
Hey man, let go of the stick. Come on, man. Dude's got my stick. You better let go. You looked at him and said, you know what? The upper end of this guy is a really solid third line two-way player. Because this guy can move his feet, he can chip in offensively as well, and defensively this guy is really sound. And every time it seems as if when Casey Cizikas is on the ice, something is happening for the New York Islanders on both sides of the puck. I'm loving watching Casey Cizikas in this opening round. But the other guy to me is Travis Hamonic. Travis Hamonic played junior hockey with the Brandon Wheat Kings, went to the Memorial Cup when the first game opened. Remember, Taylor Hall checked him from behind, accordioned him into the board. Okay.
This is the sort of thing they give Emmys out for, Edzo.
It was actually Hamonic who dropped Taylor Hall in that opening game of the Memorial Cup final in Brandon, where we saw Taylor Hall go into the boards like an accordion. Never thought he'd stand up, let alone come back and score a gorgeous goal. Anyway, Travis Hamonic, if you look at the ice time and you compare Sidney Crosby's ice times and his shifts and when he's on and for how long he's on, we talk a lot about how, you know, Randy Carlyle is trying to get Phil Kessel away from Zdeno Chara. You look at what Jack Capuano is doing with Travis Hamonic. Every time Sidney Crosby touches the ice, Hamonic is out there and in his face. And look what happened at the end of the game as well, right up there in Malkin's face. The game within a game that I'm following in this one is Travis Hamonic all over Sidney Crosby, driving him to frustration, driving him to distraction. To me, one of the great unsung stories in these playoffs early on is the play of Travis Hamonic. Sign me up for Team Hamonic.
Hey, listen. Sign everybody up for Team Islanders, man. You're starting to see it, aren't you? You're starting to see the wave of nostalgic bliss that is the Islanders' popularity.
What did I say at the beginning of the year? I really want to like this team. I really want to. There's a lot of people in that organization that can't stand me. One in particular who holds a great platform of power and influence in that organization. But I love the players on this team. I love the characters. I love the composition of this team. I love the Bad News Bears-ishness of the New York Islanders. I really do love what I'm seeing from the Islanders.
They would have had that so much better if Capuano didn't get thin. He needed his stay fat.
But dude, the great story about that is he kept his fat suits. Like, he knows that he's just visiting. He knows that he's just visiting. He's still got the I was saying that to Jason York yesterday. He's like, man, Capuano's lost a lot of weight. I'm like, yeah, but dude, he's still wearing the same old fat guy suits. Like, he knows he's just visiting. He's going back. So he's not getting a new wardrobe. That's what I love about Capuano.
So there you go. So the season on the line potentially for the Pittsburgh Penguins in game 5, and they go with Tomas Vokoun.
Yeah.
All right, prediction time, sir, before we start the show proper. Prediction time. What are your thoughts on this move? Is it going to pan out?
I think it works out for Pittsburgh. I really do. And I'm basing that nothing other than all that Pittsburgh needs is a little bit better net minding, because the goals take care of themselves with that Penguin squad in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Right? When they're the Pittsburgh Penguins, good luck. All they need is some better goaltending and a save. Just give me a save. Ask any player up and down the bench candidly. What do you want in this series? We want a save. I think Thomas, well, obviously, because Fleury has had such a struggle with the puck. I mean, that puck is coming in the size of a pea. He can't see that thing. And you saw on the Cizikas goal, that's a combination of bad positioning and bad luck and just bad goalie mojo. Something's going on. Like, dude, drink ayahuasca after the game, not before the game. Something's happening there. Thomas Vokoun, I think, can give them the save.
Something happened in here.
Yeah, see, come on, Wish. Right. Weather's getting nice, so let's get into our hippie tunes again.
All right, everybody. We have to start the show in a second because we have to do a Wednesday favorite earlier than we normally do. So let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
We're going to get corner offices out of this one for sure, Greg. Right away, your BS detector should go off. Why do I know this crap? What's wrong with me? Are you insane?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
You and I are not quite that dissimilar.
La 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 la, hockey, hockey, hockey.
Seattle is playing excellent defense these days.
What does that even mean?
Debate hockey.
So much junior hockey knowledge in that big juicy brain.
Oh, yeah.
Pop culture.
See, I kind of look at our podcast here like Jazz Odyssey.
There's some bloggers that are great, that are entertaining, that are factual. It's fabulous.
Damn right, JD.
And more hockey.
Just if we need to shoot off the side of the barn. That's how I developed my wrist shot, shooting frozen cow patties in Lloydminster.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Merrick versus Wyshynski, huh?
Huh?
Oh, all right. Friday favor coming up in a second. First off, let's put a nice little bow around the Tuesday night action. Ottawa, Montreal. Ottawa wins in overtime 3-2
on
a Kyle Turris goal. Kyle Turris was the number one star last night on Puck Daddy for two reasons. One, that goal scored against Peter Budaj, and good Jesus, could Montreal, for the comic book fans out there, could we find a Lazarus pit to dunk all of the Canadiens into to heal them? Because for God's sakes, man, the injuries for this team in this series are preposterous. Now Gianta's out for the season. Carey Price gets hurt right before overtime, and then Budaj plays. Turris, number one star last night, scoring the goal in overtime, but also playing a significant role on Corey Conacher's game winner, being in the crease, mucking around with Carey Price. He actually made contact with Price's stick. He was in the crease because George has pushed him in there, but Turris was a major factor in both of those goals, the tying and the game-winning ones, and Ottawa takes a 3-1 lead.
And he's a lean guy to begin with, but now he looks gaunt. Like, every time I look at Kyle Turris, like, he looks like he's nothing. There's some skin.
Are you doing the grandmotherly, come on, Kyle, eat the sandwich. You're wasting away to nothing. Eat a piece of chicken, Kyle.
Eat something. Get that man some food already, crying out loud. Here's the interesting thing about the Corey Conacher goal for me. I don't know that I've ever seen a more substantial goal set up by two flubbed passes. The first one coming out of Ottawa's own zone with Erik Karlsson, who rushes a pass. I think it goes off the toe of his stick. It's an awful pass, but it ends up being a perfect pass. And then on zone entry, I think it was Silfverberg, he flubs a pass, and it ends up in the perfect spot.
Yeah.
Like, it was almost as if when you saw those things, two things happen, you said to yourself, I'm not much of a believer in fate, never mind in life, but in sports. that goal almost seemed fated. Like, it was going to happen. When you see two significant bad plays turn into good things, you're saying to yourself, someone's waving a magic wand here at Scotiabank Place. I'm not sure where their wizard is, but someone's waving a magic wand here. Also, to the point about the injuries for the Montreal Canadiens, upper body injuries for Brandon Prust and for Preston White won't play tomorrow. Lower body injury for Carey Price, so that's obvious. He's listed as day-to-day. Michel Therrien on when Gionta got hurt, quote, "He's got a lot of courage. Our captain was crying in my arms. It's demanding. It's tough. The way we play, we certainly deserve a better fate. Our captain was crying in my arms."
Yeah, wow.
There's only one team that can get away with saying that, and that's the Montreal Canadiens. He was crying into arms.
He was crying into arms.
Into harm.
Also last night, we had Pittsburgh, Ottawa. Chicago over Minnesota, 3-0. Again, bad luck befalls the Minnesota Wild. After losing Backstrom before game one, they lose Harding last night. Kemper comes in and gives up a rather bad goal to Patrick Sharp. 3-0 Chicago. Corey Crawford, the shutout. Patrick Sharp,
okay.
Two goals.
Here's my question. So Nick Backstrom couldn't play last night, right?
Well, he was the backup, but he couldn't play, right? He couldn't play, but he could be the backup.
But he could be the guy that comes, you know, gets out of his suit and gets into the gets into his goalie gear for the third period. Can he play or not? Because if he can't play, what's he doing dressed?
Yeah.
He's just a prop? He just need a goalie prop there?
Yeah, he's a prop.
Hey, look, it's Nick Backstrom.
Like, oh boy, we better not run that goalie or else Backstrom's coming in.
Oh, here comes Backstrom, the guy that was in suit for the first two periods.
That's Backstrom's music.
He just appeared at ringside. It's like, what was that? I'm still trying to figure out what that was. All of a sudden, he appears out of the shadows. There comes Nick Backstrom, talking to the trainer, nodding his head. Can he go or not?
Yeah. That's a good point. That's an excellent point, actually. Excellent point. And then finally, elimination night for the Vancouver Canucks. 4-3, San Jose in overtime. Clutch Patty Marleau with the goal, his fourth of the series, on a just truckload of bullshit penalty on Daniel Sedin in overtime. I feel that feel, my Vancouver friends, that are upset about that call. It was horseshit. It was a terrible penalty in overtime. I don't necessarily buy the Jason Botchford, Kelly Sutherland has it in for Elaine Vigneault conspiracy theory, but then again, the Vancouver media is known to wear the tinfoil hat now and again. But I do think it was a terrible call, and it sucks. But at the same time, you know what else sucks? The Sedins playing seven games against San Jose and scoring a goal. Now, they had a bunch of assists, but they scored a goal against San Jose this year.
Here's the problem. Yeah, that's right. And you have to wonder. I mean, here's again the two forwards you've built everything around offensively. Are they playoff type performers? So far, all indications are no. But what can you do with them? You can do nothing with them. They're there. You're stuck with them. You got them. You can't move them because if you want to move one, you got to move two. One of the issues.
Can we dial it back for a second? Can you believe that is actually a thing in this league? Like, there are two players in this league that you can't trade one without the other, not only because of the chemistry they have, but because they're twins. That's crazy.
I know. I don't get it, but I'm not a twin, so I don't know. But apparently from anyone that I've talked to who has a twin, the relationship is more than just, you know, brother, sister, or brother, brother. There's a whole different dimension to it. If you're a twin out there, if you have a twin out there, tweet me in and describe what that relationship is like, because everyone that I've ever talked to is it's more than bizarre.
I always imagine it's more than just
sibling, like the regular sibling.
If Vancouver ever tried to trade one without the other, like I always figured it would be like the scene in E.T. where the government officials are dragging E.T. away and his little bony hand is reaching out for Elliot and he's screaming. The bony hand one, I always assume, would be like would be Henrik, by the way.
You know what it would be like? It would be like that scene in Strange Brew where Bob and Doug both get separated. One goes with the girl, the other goes with Rosie LaRose. And they realize this is the first time we've ever been apart in the brewery. That's what the scene would be like. The moment they first, like, both, like, walk different ways. Wait a minute. What are we doing here? They can't. Here's the problem with that call. Was it a bad call? Of course it was a bad call. That's an awful call, compounded by the fact that it's in a closeout game in overtime. It's a terrible call. But the problem is, Vancouver put themselves in a position where a bad call was going to hurt them. And as we've seen in the NHL before, bad calls are just, I'm sorry, man, it's just part of the warp and woof of what happens in the NHL. That's just it. They're going to be bad calls. Trying to put yourself in a position where a bad call is really going to hurt you. Because you know it's coming. Ask every player, do you know you're going to get a bad call every game? Yep, we know it. Referees are human. You're going to play a perfect shift every time you go out there? No, you're going to have a bad shift. A goalie's going to flub a bad shot. And a referee is going to make a bad call. It's just the way it happens in the NHL. The problem is, you don't want to put yourself in a position where that bad call can crush you, and Vancouver did.
So what does Vancouver do now? We're going to have a piece on Puck Daddy about this today. I think it's going to publish after this podcast is live. But, you know, I think it's there's two ways to look at it, which is that you're either going to blow up the team or you're going to get rid of the coach. And hope against hope that the window hasn't closed. And I think that's what they'll end up doing. They'll end up firing Alain Vigneault.
Yeah.
And then they will bring someone else in that can maybe coach this roster a bit better than he can. It's not a roster he can coach very well. It's a different team than I think fits his style. And so it's kind of the Washington Capitals situation. They overreact to things that happen in the playoffs. They try to get too defensive, right? Mm-hmm. That's what got Boudreaux canned in Washington. So now if they fire Vigneault, they have to go out and get some offensive guy. And get their Adam Oates guy and hope that this roster can grok to what he's teaching. But at the end of the day, Merrick, I don't buy that dogma. I think the roster is the problem.
I agree. But I think if one has to go, then two have to go.
Because
I don't see this as, I don't think this is, I think there probably needs to be a new voice in there. I'll grant those people that say that Alain Vigneault has to go. I'll grant them that. I think there needs to be a new voice in there. But I look at this more as a problem of composition than of coaching. I mentioned this on the podcast yesterday. Again, I asked the same question. What has Mike Gillis done? Since 2008, when he took over this team, what has he done? Show me the good signings, show me the good trades, and show me the good draft picks. I'll hang up and wait. You know what I mean?
The
bloated contract.
He got Chris. Didn't he pick up Chris Higgins? And then him?
Oh yeah, he picked up Chris Higgins. He also picked up David Booth. There was Ballard, who now they're going to have to probably buy out in the offseason. Like, go right down the list. You know, Cody Hodgson, his first pick. It's a great pick. Got off to a bad start with Vancouver. They both got on the bad sides of each other from the get go. From the acrimony between Vancouver and Cody Hodgson happened early. And remember that first season when he got sent back to Brampton after getting false started on his back a couple of times? It was nasty. And it was ugly to the point where, you know, Rich Winter's got to play the my client wants a trade card. So they get rid of the best pick that Mike Gillis has made in his tenure. They found Frankie Corrado in the fifth round. I think that's a good pick. But when you're drafting someone in the fifth round, you also say it's also a lucky pick. Frankie Corrado is going to be a good NHL defenseman. I like Frankie Corrado a lot. But other than that, what's he done draft-wise? What's he done by way of trade? How many contracts can you look at and say, you know what, that's a good contract? What happened with the Luongo situation? How did that play itself out?
Brutal.
Did he misread the marketplace? Of course he misread the marketplace. Again, my same question. What has Mike Gillis done? He got a couple of sleep doctors in there to help with the guys at nap time. There's a new dressing room.
Wow.
Sorry. It sounds harsh. I know that. It sounds harsh. But really, like, what has he... it's a matter of
composition. There's nothing better than, like, taking the piss out of a guy for not being a good general manager and then just hitting him in the knees with some... Oh, and also, you're a new age douchebag for trying this doctor sleep thing.
No, I think that's good. I don't mean to be flippant about that, because I think that is one thing that Mike Gillis wisely read and realized that Vancouver's travel schedule and sleep patterns have been horribly affected by their schedule. And so for that, I say good for him. Because not a lot of general managers, even thought about that or considered that or thought that could show up.
But your point is that if we wanted something that could make the players sleep better but not be able to make a good hockey trade, then they should hire that box that makes the ocean noises by your bed to be the general manager of Vancouver.
Oh, jeez. Okay, now that's harsh. That's harsh. I'm just trying to find like something. Give me. And now here's the problem for Vancouver too. Who's your goaltender?
You know, Jim Matheson made the point today that they should keep Luongo and trade Schneider because Schneider has more value. Now, granted, his point was that the Islanders would trade Niederreiter and Okposo for Schneider, which is insane.
Whoa.
But the point is taken that you could get a better return for Schneider than you can Luongo.
Okay, but then here comes the question. Are you starting to do a rebuild in Vancouver? And if you're starting to do a rebuild, why do you have Luongo there?
They're not. They're gonna try to keep this. They're gonna jam something under this window, like an old shoe or something, or a stack of books to keep it from closing.
They won the division. Like there's no. Like, I don't follow the people that say, oh, you got to tear this thing down to the bone. They just won the division.
They've lost.
It's still a good team. So it's still a team that gets
the playoffs. So you're saying you win the division, but you lose 8 of 9 playoff games. It's just a matter of trying to figure out what's going wrong in the playoffs. The window is open.
You can't burn it down. I think the window to still make the playoffs is there, but the window to win the Stanley Cup is gone.
Okay.
Right?
Fair enough.
There are two things. They're not a Stanley Cup. They're a playoff team. They're not a Stanley Cup team. That's pretty obvious by now.
All right. Well, this is going to be a story that obviously plays out throughout the summer, which is going to be really fun. There's obviously a part of all of us that aren't Vancouver fans. I mean, by that, I mean like outside of Vancouver fans that wanted to see this thing go sideways, just to see what happens, just to see how that franchise reacts to a sweep in the first round. Anyways, there's that. Let us, sir, now get to a Wednesday favorite here on the Merrick First Virginsky podcast. Do you want to do a mailbag segment every week?
It's time to look deep into the souls of Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski. Not that deep.
We are nutting up for each other here.
Now's your chance to ask Merrick and Wyshynski anything, and we mean anything.
You got your thinking, Took?
Vegan cooking tips. Favorite Doctor Who characters. What's the best bar in Stouffville? Is there a bar in Stouffville? The meaning of life. Wait, let's not get carried away with that.
We answer your mail.
PuckDaddyBlog@yahoo.com. On Twitter at Jeff Merrick and at Wyshynski. We're going postal on Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Well, we are.
Yes.
We are, in fact, going postal today, sir.
I love this one.
The first question today comes from Pavel Jerku, a listener who I imagine is probably lives in like Jersey City, but I assume is from out of the country. Hey, Greg, is it true that you like the Canadian hardcore band Fucked Up? If so, what other bands do you enjoy? I would like to expand this question to Mr. Merrick, because Merrick is a huge music guy. I am, in fact, a fan of that band. I'm a huge fan of that band, actually. And I don't listen to a lot of hardcore music. In fact, if I had to talk about like the punk I listen to, it's mostly going to be your classic early 80s, 1970s punk, like the Sex Pistols and the Misfits and Iggy and the Stooges and stuff like that. That's more along the lines of what I listen to. From today's ilk, I probably listen to more like pop punk than I do anything hardcore.
Yeah. Last from that genre that I saw, when Claire and I first started dating, she took me to see Bad Religion, and I knew nothing about Bad Religion, and I freaking loved it. That was an awesome show.
We've talked about music on the show.
Where do you put Deftones? What category do you put Deftones? Because I really dig Deftones now.
That's a really good question. Because Deftones are going to be right in that, who the hell sang the... Mike Ness is the lead singer. The band that did the awesome cover of Ring of Fire by Johnny Cash. For God's sake.
Someone did a cover of that great song?
Yeah. Hang on.
Someone's going to hit you up on Twitter in 2 seconds.
I can't believe I'm spacing on this.
Social Distortion.
Thank you, Social D. Yeah, I put them in the same genre of Social D,
okay.
Personally.
Yeah, Bad Religion was great.
Okay. There it is.
Yeah.
So there is music. What are you listening to these days? Anything in particular?
I'm all over the board. Before the show, I try to listen to something. Today it was Foo Fighters, but I mean, I go from everywhere. From like today on my run, I listen to an hour and a half of Tibetan meditation music, and then I'll like come back and listen to like Rammstein. So I'm all over the board. What about you?
I am also all over the board. I'm trying to think about what I've been listening to lately, mostly.
My go-to is always, like, my favorite band of all time is Rio Statics, David Eanie's old band.
My favorite band of all time is Smashing Pumpkins. That's my favorite band.
Pumpkins, eh?
Yeah, huge Pumpkins fan before things got douchey and weird and they started firing everybody.
Maybe it's like for the last couple of years, because I always get to things late. So last about 3 years, I've just been ODing on Tool and Nine Inch Nails. That's been me.
Next question is from, let's see here, Paul McCann writes in. Paul McCann's a Sharks fan, by the way. The Sharks had a bad call go against them in the 2011 series against Vancouver. You know what they say about great teams making their own breaks? The Canucks got another huge break late in the third period when the Sharks got called for icing, even though replay showed the puck deflected off of Daniel Sedin. The Sharks protested, notably Ryan Klobe, but the faceoff went to the Sharks zone and set up Ryan Kessler's heroics. His goal at 19:46 tied the game, and you just knew how it would end after that. That's more along the lines, not a question, but that's just a rebuttal to the overtime thing that we were talking about before.
Do you think it was sort of poetic justice that it was Kevin Bieksa in the penalty box, considering the last time these two teams met, it was Kevin Bieksa with that flub shot that eliminated the San Jose Sharks?
That and also it was also Kevin Bieksa who, you know, called out the two of the stars on the Sharks as not being Canadian enough for embellishing. Jared from Edmonton writes in, do you think the NHL will ever make the referees accountable for mistakes? Players and coaches can get fired and suspended and get vilified when they don't make themselves available to the media, but a ref can make a poor call that directly affects the outcome of a game, and they can completely hide from the media and the fans. It's interesting. I mentioned that Vancouver Providence column earlier, Jason Botchford, with the conspiracy theory about Kelly Sutherland, but he also called the NHL chicken shit, actually said chicken shit online in the province, with their policy with regard to referees speaking after games. And I tend to agree with him. You know, I really do feel that you don't need to have an official's press conference after every game, because I think that's a little bit much. But when you do have these moments of controversy, there should be some kind of interaction between the media and an official
There's a pool reporter who's allowed in. I mean, Farhan Lalji got that comment yesterday from Sutherland. But the thing is, too, they are made accountable, and it's with playoff assignments. It's with extra money, right? That's what the guys are all. That's what they are all officiating for during the regular season to get playoff assignments and
giving a quote to a stenographer is not accountable. Coming out and actually meeting a scrum of reporters is accountable.
But do you want officials to make calls based on what they're going to have to say about it in the post game press conference, or do you just want them to make calls as they best see fit?
As they best see fit, but I mean, you know, are you saying that they're going to shy away from making calls because of having to face the music based on their actions?
Do you want it to even be part of the conversation or the part of the thought process at that moment?
Well, then I guess they're not professionals then, based on what you said on yesterday's podcast.
I was going to get to that in a couple of seconds here. Based on yesterday's comments, of course they should be made accountable. They should be, go face the music. But to your point yesterday about being influenced by the marketplace, do you want that to happen to officials? You seem to be fine with it with the Professional Hockey Writers Association. Why is it different for the Professional
Hockey Association? I never said I was fine with it. In fact, I said that they should be wary of it. I was worried about my brethren being influenced by the local marketplace. But, you know, listen, I feel like, you know, when it comes to post-game comments, the fans, the paying customers, ask for candor from coaches and candor from players and maybe, you know, candor from the league and its officials.
How long do you think a press conference with an official would be after a game? Like, these guys have to make flights. Because then you know it would be a bunch of reporters detailing every single call and non-call and measuring it up against other calls that have been made or not been made throughout the entire season. Those would be the longest press conferences of any. Like, you could have a press conference with Gordie Howe, Bobby Orr, Wayne Gretzky, and the ghost of Maurice Richard, and it still wouldn't be as long as a press conference with a referee after a playoff game.
John Ritzel writes in, how does one exactly get a job in the Toronto War Room? That's a very good question.
You have to probably work for the NHL.
You have to work for the NHL.
Have worked for the NHL. Have played
the
game.
You have to have a son in the league, or you have to take a blood oath that you will fix games that Vancouver is a part of to ensure that they never win a cup. So those are the two prerequisites. If you take a blood oath, you're there, or if you have a son actively participating in the National Hockey League, you can be in there in an official capacity.
It's a thankless job. And those guys, oh, jeez. They watch so... I mean, we all watch a ton of games. But they watch, I mean, I watch, and listen, I watch a ton of games, Wish, you watch a ton of games, people listening watch a ton of games as well. It's different in the war room with everything with a magnifying glass. And then getting calls all through, I mean, we're as guilty as anybody else at SportsCenter of calling all the time. What'd you think of this? What'd you think of that? What'd you think of this? What'd you think of that? What's the explanation there? And they take all the calls. It is honestly one of the most chaotic places to work in the industry. It's harsh, and they got to watch it with a microscope.
Yeah,
but how do you get there? You have to have played in the NHL, And I think that's fair. I think that's fair as far as criteria goes.
The next one, sir, is from Jeremy Ham.
Hey,
if you could change any goal song for any team, which would be your highest priority, and which would be the best replacement? Mine is the Sharks. I hate Gary Glitter for obvious reasons, and I want any memory of him to die with fire. Sad thing is, they tried to replace it with Green Day and went back to the Glitter classic. I am someone who can separate the artist from the art, let's say, if you want to call Rock and Roll Part 2 art. I've never been somebody who's like, oh, what a ghastly individual. Let's not give him any royalties by playing his song. It's a great arena song. I'm sorry. It just is.
You know what? You know who was a wife beater? Picasso. But last time I checked, Guernica was a pretty amazing piece of art. Now I'm with you. I can separate the person.
Well, I mean, I shield my eyes from Picasso's because of that very fact. To answer your question, though, Jeremy, I will go in the future on this one. Whatever the Islanders' goal song is currently, you get rid of it the moment you move to Brooklyn and you adopt Jay-Z's 99 Problems But a Bitch Ain't One as your goal song. It doesn't have anything chantable, but it's a great song, and it would be wonderful. or Jay-Z's On to the Next One as your goal song would be awesome, too.
You know,
either one of those.
You know.
You're moving to Brooklyn. It's Jay-Z's town. Make it all Jay-Z after your score goal.
You know what I've been fixated on lately? And this may just be the
boobs
in me coming out.
Oh.
That, too. In their two settings, dormant and erect. Hello. Is it the weekend? Silence. The sound of silence after goals, and I'm going to shoot Tim Thompson this note, wouldn't you love to see one of those Hockey Night in Canada montages without music?
Oh,
and
that's interesting.
Just have the action tell the story? Just like
that's
the gravity of just like, it's like, No Country for Old Men. One of the reasons why I love that movie, there's no background soundtrack. Nothing. It's creepy and dark. To me, I'm gonna shoot Timmy that note. My one is I'd love to see a Hockey Night montage with silence, and I'd like that for goal celebrations too. Why does there have to be a song? Mm. Why? Why?
Get the crowd.
It's like
going.
Ring entrances for UFC fighters. So I'm waiting for that one guy to come out like Mike Tyson used to, black trunks, black boots, white towel around his neck, no music, all business.
Question for Greg. This is from Dan Saraceni, I believe. Has this current playoff run brought your dad back into the Islanders fan fold, or has that ship sailed and been replaced by a Devils one? Well, the answer to that is I don't know. I last thing I heard, he's obviously has an affinity for the Islanders in this series against the Penguins, but I don't think he's... I mean, he's a Devils fan. He lives and dies with the NJD. He's not going to flip back to becoming an Islanders fan. Just because they're good. I mean, he's not like all of the other bandwagoners in Long Island.
Ah, that's a little harsh.
What? It's not harsh at all. It's true. Same thing happened in Boston, right?
Here's my problem with calling fans bandwagon fans. So I live in Toronto, just outside of it now. And I've always heard these Maple Leafs fans being referred to as idiots, walking ATM machines. They're losing. Why are you going to the games? But then if you don't go to the games and only come back when they win, then you're a bandwagon fan. So what is it? So what's it going to be? What's a real fan then? One that sticks with them in good times and bad, or one that just shows up when they win? Like, are you a loser for supporting the team when they lose? Or are you a bandwagoner if you just show up when they win? What is it? Can someone give me the right way to behave as a fan?
Oh, that usually falls to me. I tell people when to cheer injuries or boo injuries. So... Real quick, Richard Stabler, hey, Wyszynski, any cigar advice for a relative newbie? I prefer cigarillos and flavored ones at that. Hate the ones that wind up smelling like a urinal after you light them, only threw up once. If you like flavored ones, I don't really have any advice because I'm not a flavored cigar guy. I will say that I once had a really great flavored cigar that was from Maker's Mark. It was soaked in Maker's Mark bourbon.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty good. So if you don't like the normal tobacco-y smell, maybe go for something like that. But as far as like getting into cigars, I've always said that the best entry point that I think have would be a Romeo y Julieta light wrapper one. It's a good smoke, it's a smooth smoke, and then you can get into some of the more adventurous stuff. Also, Grey Cliffs are pretty much my favorite cigar outside of Hoya de Nicaragua, and a Grey Cliff is a very easy smoke as well.
I don't smoke cigars anymore, but when I did, I mean, I wasn't very serious about it, but I always liked Monte Cristo 3s. Are those any good?
Yeah.
I always came back to Monte Cristo 3s.
I think that's a solid choice as well. And finally, this is from Ari Margolin. Just gotta find this one real quick. Doopy doopy doop. There it is.
Why don't we do it after our guest? Because Bob Miller's standing by.
Is he standing by? Okay, forget it. We'll get to that in a sec. Okay.
Bob Miller is the longtime play-by-play voice of the defending Stanley Cup champion Los Angeles Kings. He joins us now on the Merrick V. Wyshynski podcast. Bob, how are you today, sir?
Good, Jeff and Greg. How are you guys doing?
Hello, Bob.
We're doing great, and this is an easy one for us to say. The Kings-Blues series with about 2,314 hits between the two teams right now has, even though we haven't seen the most amount of offensive output from both teams, last game not included, this has easily been the most exciting series of the playoffs. Bob, agree or disagree?
Well, I agree, and there's no doubt about that. It has been a tremendously physical series, and that's what everybody figured because the two big teams haven't been quite 2,000 hits, but what we got is 335 hits in four games so far between the two teams. So it's been physical, and now it's the best two out of three. The Kings really felt in the third period of game four, they started to play the way they played last year in the playoffs, and that's what Ken Hitchcock said this morning. He said, we tried to throw the knockout punch when we were up 2-0 early in the game, and we got caught. Our defensemen got caught pinching in. We gave up outnumbered attacks, and that's not the way we play. So I think you're going to see a different tactic tonight from the St. Louis Blues.
I did not realize this until he scored that Andrei Kopitar had gone without a goal since, March 25th.
Yes.
What was that about? What was that drought about for those of us who don't see the Kings on a nightly basis?
Well, the goal he had the other night was his first in 20 games, and we started talking about that and looking back. He has had some droughts before during the regular season, and then we were thinking, in the regular season, in games, maybe the drought was around games 51 to 61 or something, and that would coincide right now with how many games the Kings have played, 48 in the regular season and now 4 in the playoffs, and so maybe that's not so unusual. The thing that bothered me a little bit wasn't that he wasn't scoring. I didn't see the compete level in every game that we are used to seeing from Andrei Kopitar. I didn't think he was making plays. He was still playing very well defensively. He's one of the best guys on offense getting back in the transition and getting back defensively, and he was still doing that. But the other night when he got that goal, and then he seemed to raise the level of his play, and that'll be very crucial, I think, in seeing if the Kings can win this series.
What's your thoughts on Drew Doughty so far in this series? The Jason Williams goal, even though Doughty's name's not on the score sheet, I thought that was all about the play that Drew Doughty made. How do you assess his performance so far?
Well, I think he plays so many minutes. I know one game he played 29 minutes and 29 seconds, and so he's out there a lot. Very, very good as far as bringing the puck out of our own end. And so we're used to seeing that from Drew. And he had a little slow start at times this year and, wasn't scoring goals, and it was really bothering him. And then he started to come on and started to score some goals there in the latter part of the regular season. So he is obviously very valuable. And I think what has helped him is being teamed with Robin Reguerre, and he knows that Reguerre is so good defensively that Drew can take that chance offensively once in a while and get the green light to go ahead and jump up in the play offensively and not have to worry about getting back all the time on defense. So There's another guy that is so valuable to this team, the way that that he can play both offense and defense.
From year to year, have you seen any change in the St. Louis Blues team, or is it pretty much, well, I mean, outside of Pietrangelo being healthy this time, is it pretty much the same team that you saw last year?
Well, you know, they were very good last year, and then they got in the playoffs, and Elliott had problems, and whether it was an inner ear infection or whatever that put his equilibrium off, there was some talk about that when the series started. Whatever it was, I think we were all surprised last year that the Kings won in four straight. I knew that, and so did our coaching staff and our players knew that this was a very good St. Louis team, very good matchup with the Kings as far as the physical play and how big they are. And and I've seen Elliott seems much better this year in this series than he was when the two teams met a year ago. So I haven't seen too much difference. They've got that big fourth line, and I think they're going to put them back together. Cracknell, as far as we know, will be in the lineup tonight. And they were so effective in the first three games. And then they took Cracknell out in game four, put Tarasenko in, and whether Tarasenko will be in on a different line tonight, Ken Hitchcock wasn't giving that away. But and he didn't really say Cracknell will be back in, but everybody is figuring that will happen. So they're going to have that the big bodies on that fourth line back in that lineup tonight.
Yeah, you're right. It sounds as if Tarasenko is out, Bob, and it looks like it's you know, it's going to be that Chris Porter, Ryan Reeves fourth line. Everything else sort of remains the same. Curious about David Backes as well. Took a, I guess they call it a maintenance warning. This guy is hitting every single thing that moves. Most notably, when at home, Anze Kopitar. How do you handle a player like David Backes?
Well, you know, I guess you got to be aware of where he is on the ice, because he is a force out there, and you know, you've just got to be aware of him, and he's had some great chances. Actually, had that goal early in the game the other night in game four, and then had several other chances on a breakaway or point-blank chances that Jonathan Quick has come up with some big saves on him. So he's effective, even though, you know, may not get the goals that they would like or the number of goals, but you've got to be aware of him, and he's been stopped and maybe frustrated a little by Jonathan Quick, because he's had great, great chances, and Quick has come up with the saves.
Kind of an off-the-ice question for you. Your observations on how hockey culture has changed in L.A. in the last year. You win a cup, you get a whole bunch of new people into hockey. Unfortunately, the local media sometimes thinks you're the Sacramento Kings, but that's okay. That happens. What's it been like being around this team? I mean, is there a different vibe in the arena after you win a cup, or is it kind of the same thing that you've been feeling over the years with the Kings?
No, there was a different vibe. There was a vibe of our fans finally realizing that, hey, these are the Stanley Cup champions. In my own mind, I am not convinced that the Kings got the credit and notoriety for being the Stanley Cup champions around the rest of the country. I've seen a lot of magazine articles, and you don't see a King on the cover necessarily, and you see commercials talking about buying NHL apparel, and maybe you don't see a Kings logo in there. And for that reason, I think they're not getting quite the credit that some of the other teams that are higher profile. Even though they won the cup, I don't know that they've moved up around the country or North America into a higher profile. But in Los Angeles, it is still, I mean, it's a tough sell when you've got two Major League Baseball teams and two NBA teams and two major college football and basketball teams and two NHL teams 30 miles apart. You know, it's a tough sell with everything that's going on, even when you've won a championship. But I think from our fans' standpoint, they're very proud now to wear the Kings logo and wear the Kings sweatshirts and T-shirts and walk around and let people know we're Kings fans, and it's the thing to do right now, and especially now with the basketball teams are gone, they're out of the playoffs, and the Dodgers are struggling, and so are the Angels, and so again, it's time for the Kings to kind of take over the market. I think the way you become notarized in that team or in that city is to win year after year. You can't win it one year and then disappear. So I think this is a really critical year for the Kings. You get that publicity of being a winning team when you do it year after year. And Dean Lombardi, the general manager, has hoped that that's the way he's built this team, to be a contender year after year. And here we are. We'll see who wins the next couple of games in this series and see if the Kings can move on.
Bob, you've been the voice. Last question for me. You've been the voice of the Los Angeles Kings going back to 1973. You've seen some good teams, some teams that have struggled. You've seen some superstar players, some cult hero players, some lovable players. If there were a couple of players from the LA Kings past that you whose games you called that you could automatically give a Stanley Cup, guys that you love and you just wish they won a Stanley Cup, who would those guys be?
Well, it'd be pretty simple. It would be Marcel Dion and Dave Taylor. They had great, great careers and unfortunately never won a Stanley Cup. And, you know, they on that Triple Crown line along with Charlie Sommer, they were so effective and so much fun to watch. And yet, in spite of the games they played, over 1,000 games, and Marcel among the top five or six scorers all time in the league, and Dave Taylor, you know, a low draft pick and scores over 1,000 points, they would be the two that I would say you got to give it to them.
Last one for me. You've been in this game for quite a while. We are in the Stanley Cup playoffs. What was the longest overtime game that you've been a part of, and what was your memory from that?
Well, it was a game into two overtimes against Vancouver in I think it was 93 when we went to the finals. I believe now you're really testing my memory now, but it was a double overtime in Vancouver, and Gary Tkachuk scored for the Kings. Mm-hmm. To win the game in the second overtime. I think it went 6.5 minutes. So it's like 26 some minutes into overtime that I've done. And he won the game, and it was one of those scrambles in front of the net. And all of a sudden, the only guy I saw indicate that it was in was Luc Robitaille, who leaped up in the air back behind the net with his arms in the air. And you could see it. The most interesting one, I think, was in 1976. 18 minutes into the first overtime against the Boston Bruins in a game six that the Kings had to win to send it back to Boston for game seven. And Butch Goring scored and scored on Jerry Cheevers, came across the blue line, cut to his left and put it right inside the goalpost. And it was the only time then and even to this day that I've seen a hockey player carried off the ice on the shoulders of his teammates. The Kings came out on the ice, lifted Butch up, and carried him off the ice on their shoulders. I hadn't seen it before, and I've never seen it since.
Wow. Outstanding. It's a great story.
That's awesome.
Bob, thanks so much, as always, for stopping by and sharing your expertise and historical insight as well. Enjoy the game tonight, and enjoy the playoffs the rest of the way, sir.
Okay, guys. Very nice to be with you.
Bob Miller is the play-by-play voice of the Los Angeles Kings, going back to 1973. Greg Wyshynski, Los Angeles Kings face off against the St. Louis Blues later on this evening.
Before we set up the games tonight. Oh,
yeah,
it's awesome.
Go.
Before we set up the games tonight, real quick, Ari Margolin's final going postal.
Yeah, do it.
What is the greatest game you've ever attended?
Oh, jeez. I don't want to give a flippant answer, but I have to think of it. I've been
I'll
to
go
some
first.
Great ones.
You want me to go first?
Yeah, sure.
Ovechkin-Crosby double hat trick game was the single greatest hockey game I've ever seen, as far as like just two players elevating each other, and then the snarky Sid, it took him too long to clear all the hats off the ice thing at the end. That game was because that was the Stones and the Beatles at the height of their powers. Like that was the two biggest stars in the world. Battling it out in the series the first time. That was incredible.
Canada Cup 87's got to be mine, for sure. Gretzky to Lemieux. That's mine.
You know, I probably would put the gold medal game of the Vancouver Olympics in that column.
I was gonna say,
but
the best game.
I hate when teams win on aggregate points like the U.S. did. So, had they won the game outright, I'd probably put it there.
You left after the third period, right? Because you thought, oh, it's tied.
I did. That's right. I did.
We have ties in hockey, right? It's just tied.
Oh, totally. Tonight, yeah. Boston and Toronto. Good on Toronto getting that kid who got knocked out by a Bruins fan in Boston some tickets for games.
That's
four.
Right.
That's kind of cool.
Great. Good stuff.
I like the way Boston, you put it. Boston,
you,
know,
you, you, I like the way you put it on Puck Daddy. Now there'd be a bunch of Maple Leafs fans looking to get knocked out so they can get free Leafs tickets. Would you get knocked out and get free Leafs tickets?
Where I bet, man, I put my money on Boston tonight. Why? Because I think they're going to go up 3-1. And also, I think Tuukka Rask has something to prove. Vezina snubs, sir. Bobrovsky,
oh, yes.
Lundqvist, Niemi, your three finalists for the Vezina, rather. Did you feel like that Rask got snubbed, or do you think the top three is the top three?
Yeah, I do feel that Rask got snubbed. I do.
All right.
Although, the guy
well,
that
this
I
sounds
would
like fodder. This sounds like fodder for a video podcast, sir.
Well, why don't we do one of those then in a couple of seconds, sir?
All right. Washington to the Rangers. Again, critical game for the Rangers. Looks like they're getting Klo back tonight. Special teams, still the story in that series. When the Rangers are good at them, they win. When they are bad at them, Washington wins.
And look for the New York Rangers to try to drag the Washington Capitals through shot block and body check along the boards hell. Rangers want to slow things down. Capitals, quite the opposite. There's your story.
And finally,
for the next game.
Detroit in Anaheim for game 5 of that series. Will another of the unsung heroes in Detroit step up, or will it be Anaheim's time to take a stranglehold in this series, potentially eliminate them in game 6 back in Detroit?
Damian Brunner, Gustav Nyquist, and Joachim Andersson becoming a quick story there in Detroit.
I'll say this for the Wings. I think the Ducks are letting them hanging around too long. I think they're hanging around a little bit too long in this series.
And the scary thing is, we haven't heard from Tanner Zetterberg really yet.
No.
If you're Anaheim. Haven't heard from Zetterberg.
All right, everybody. That's the show. I'm Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet. Tonight's on Hockey Central, 11 o'clock Eastern, or whenever the Blue Jay game is over. Working with John Shannon and Iron Mike Keenan. So that's your HC panel tonight.
And I have in my hand a Vancouver Canucks cupcake, and I will see
what
happens to it.
I saw that on Twitter last night. When
I'll
are you going
to
chow
it? I'm
going
to try to. I want to film it as I chow it, but I'm waiting. I'm just trying to find time to.
Can you?
This is my effing life. Hey, welcome to my effing life. I'm trying to find time to film myself eating a cupcake. Who gets paid for this shit? Honestly.
Can you like lick the icing off really erotically? Can you do that?
Well, I didn't know I was taking requests, sir. But for you, Merrick, I would do anything.
It's the first cupcake. Come on.
Well, let me do some bench presses to get the old pecs in order, and then I'll make sure I'm untrothed for you as well. All right, everybody. Good. We'll be back tomorrow for more fun and merriment. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for all the glowing postal questions, and we'll talk to you on Thursday. Bye.